ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Dan Fitzgerald. Thanks a lot for joining me for the Country Hour today. Lieutenant Creek Agricultural Training Centre will soon be home to a temporary youth justice facility, a move that is being welcomed by a horse trainer who works with justice-involved kids.
That facility's got a huge potential to help young fellas out. We work in Dondale and Alice Springs Youth Detention Centre, so it's great to know that some of that work that we've been doing with the kids can be carried on at that facility.
Also today, you're going to hear from the part owner of the racehorse Winx's first foal, which yesterday afternoon sold for a record $10 million. And we'll also go check out some flowering bloodwood trees near Katherine, which a local beekeeper says, well, that'll make some great honey.
When they flower, the nectar is that the bees make the honey out of is beautiful. The honey itself has a real red sort of a colour to it, and it's nice and light, very pleasant tasting.
Yeah, those stories and more on the Country Hour today. Well, it's been an extremely wet year for some parts of the Northern Territory that are growing cotton crops. For farmers that managed to get their crop in around early December, they're now getting ready to start harvesting next month. So just how are NT cotton crops looking at the moment? Well, Matt Brand put this question to Simone Cameron from Cotton Australia.
They're actually looking surprisingly dandy, I'm going to say, considering the wonderful wet season conditions that they have been presented with. As we know, it's the sixth season for cotton in the north, so we're still learning a lot. But, you know, there's variability amongst the crops, and that's also dependent on the soils that they're sitting in. Some of our soils up in the top end drain really freely, and others have a bit more clay content, so they tend to hold that moisture and hold that water. So we can have some soaky areas, which cotton is okay to be in a wet soil, but it's not okay to be sitting in a puddle of water for too long. So we're sort of pleased with what the crops are doing and how they've handled the conditions that we've received this season.
Was there much replanting?
Oh, there was a little bit of replanting, but in saying that as well, the conditions that presented in our planting window, which opened up in the Northern Territory, opened up on the 1st of December and closed just around Australia Day.
Yeah.
For those that are familiar with what we were presented with seasonality-wise then, it was a little challenging. So at the tail end of the planting window, there was so much rain, a lot of our guys couldn't get on the paddock or get back into the paddock potentially to replant or even just to continue planting, because in that lead-up to Christmas, New Year, we had absolutely nothing. And our soils don't have the capacity, particularly in the top end, to hold that moisture in the profile. So you need that, you know, you need that moisture there for that little seed to be able to do its job of punching itself out of the ground.
So perhaps a challenging start for some. The crops are now up. Are you willing to say which region is perhaps looking the best at this stage?
Oh, that's a cheeky question, Matt, because you know that I'm a bit Catherine biased. But, look, I think in essence, across the board, it's looking okay. And I think, probably that sort of lower Douglas and into the Katherine region, I'm going to say, like I said, I'm biased. So, But in essence, there's some really great crops. I've seen some amazing crops in the Douglas, and I've seen everywhere I'm going. You know, there has been some fruit shedding, because obviously those bowls are considered fruit. So there has been quite a bit of fruit shedding, and that fruit shedding's based around solar radiation. So the plant has its own little sort of mechanism for, you know, survival, I guess, like lots of plants. And when there's no sun, it just sort of starts spitting its babies off. A few weeks back when we had February, March, and there was not a lot of sun, if you walked out into the paddock, you might have got a little bit nervous, don't look down.
Right. Plants were dropping some of their yield potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But because of this late stage rain, you know, the cotton plant has the ability to go, okay, sun's come out, I've got enough moisture, I'm going to grow and I'm going to start producing more babies.
What's the perfect weather from sort of between here and harvest now for a Northern Territory crop?
Yeah, look, ideally to see another small shower or two would be great because, again, our soil profiles don't have that ability to hold that moisture for a very long period of time. The further we go south, so down towards the Barkly in that clay, heavier clay type soil, you're going to get that moisture holding ability. But up here, it'd be nice to see a little, dare I say it, a little bit more rain.
If you've got little sprinkles in late April, early May,
yes,
that's beneficial.
Yeah, look, you know, I think...
For a dry land crop.
Absolutely. It'll be good to see, you know, another small shower or two. I do know over the Easter weekend, there were reports of, you know, up to 50 to 70 mils of rain that fell on some crops in that sort of lower Douglas, upper Katherine region. You know, that was well welcomed.
Yep.
A couple more showers towards the end of April. But as we know now, we've kind of got what we have in the beginning of the season. We have these isolated showers. So there's no guarantee that, you know, I've got a property that might get a rainfall event and my neighbour who's growing some cotton, they may not get that rainfall event, but I get it, you know. So it's a very much a, you know, us and them sort of scenario in the tail end of the season.
Yeah, okay. So we'll see. When's harvest expected to start?
Well, for some of those earlier planting, so those, some of those crops that got in the beginning of December, we can start to see probably those big green and gold picker machines out in the paddock in sort of May, sort of the tail end of May.
Late May, wow.
Yeah, and then on from there. So some of those later plantings that did happen after, you know, in that sort of tail end of January, they won't be looking to be picked until July, August.
And you cover all of northern Australia, so I guess just quickly, the water irrigation scheme and also North Queensland.
Yeah,
how are things going either side of the border?
Yeah, look, I think in North Queensland, I think they've fared a little bit similar to the Northern Territorians in that, you know, they've got the a very similar planting window. Essentially that early, you know, 1st of December through to late Jan. And so there were some challenges there, like similar to what we experienced. Over in Kununurra or in the Ord, well, you know, as we know, back in March there were some fairly heavy rainfalls right across the top end they have a planting window that is a little later than what we see here in the Northern Territory. So their planting window is around the 1st of February for a period of 8 weeks after that. They experienced some of the biggest rain they've seen in a long time. In fact, Lake Argyle's spillway was, 5 metres?
It's over 5 metres over.
Like, and some ridiculous gigalitres of water a second were flowing out of there. So that presented some challenges for them because they have that beautiful dark clay soil, and we know...
And irrigation.
They have plenty of irrigation. Their water is not their limiting factor, essentially. So they too, in a different way, had challenges with their planting season this year.
Okay.
For all intents and purposes, things are looking good and the sun's come back out and we're good to go.
Who's got the most cotton in the ground between the three northern jurisdictions?
Oh, the Northern Territory.
The Territory?
Yeah, the Territory.
So
at
still
the
around what?
It's around this season. The intended volume was going to be around 15,000 hectares or thereabouts.
Yep.
But I think because of the seasonal conditions, I think we're sort of sitting at the same amount as last season, which is around 12,000.
Oh, okay.
Give or take, there's probably upwards of 12,000, but it's around 12,000 hectares.
And what would be the ideal yield, do you think, potential for an NT dryland cotton crop?
Look,
people are learning each year. What could it be?
I think, I feel that anything, a dry land or a rain-fed crop, traditionally, if anything over 3.5 bales a hectare is seen as a worthwhile dry land crop.
Yeah.
For here, with the volume of water or the volume of rainfall that comes from the sky that we use as a, you know, to feed the crop, you know, we've got opportunity to see anywhere up to, you know, 6-7 bales a hectare. But of course, it's really determined on how that rain falls in the season.
Yeah,
and how
that's dry land farming.
It's
ask a wheat farmer in WA. That's just
exactly
how it rolls.
Exactly. So okay. Yeah. So look, you know, I think it's around four bales a hectare is probably a good benchmark for any producer up here to consider.
Yep.
And if anything above that is a bonus.
Okay, it's getting close to the business end for NT Cotton. Thanks so much for your time today on the Country Hour.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Simon Cameron, she's a policy manager in Northern Australia for Cotton Australia. And as Simon mentioned, there is a planting window for cotton in the NT, and it's actually a very strict window of just 8 weeks. Now, planting windows, they're regulated by the APVMA as part of what's called the Bolgard 3 Resistance Management Plan. Essentially, it's all about restricting the period of time that growers can plant cotton containing this Bolgard 3 insect control technology, and that's so that pests don't develop resistance to that technology. Now, in the Ord Irrigation Scheme, cotton growers have a slightly different 8-week planting window to here in the Territory. And according to Ord agronomist Tommy Palmer, the rain in that area has made their planting window a bit difficult to fit into.
It's been ordinary and very stop-start. And every time we get a bit of a crust and the fields become trafficable, then we get another shower that afternoon or that night. So it's been frustrating.
Have all of the growers that you've been in contact with been able to get all the cotton into the ground that they were hoping to?
Most of them. One of them really struggled. So, yeah, just kept raining and he really struggled, yeah.
So couldn't get it all in?
No.
Is the planting window being that set 8 weeks, is that in the right spot, do you think, starting 1st of Feb and then finishing 28th of March?
28th of March, yep. Look, I've been on the ground for a long time and I have checked trials mid-January, cotton trials, and with the weather that we had at that time, the crops were very waterlogged and they spat all their fruit off. And not just that, it was very hard for me to get in there and have a look at the crop. Then you've got issues of, well, how do we put an insecticide on? How do we put a growth regulant on it if you can't get in there? So in my experience, I would say the first, second week of February seems to be the sweet spot. And as I said, I'm only going off my experience being on the ground. So, yeah, that's the time that I think works best.
How are we going to go then when there is a gin in Kununurra and growers are looking to really ramp up planting and there's still that 8-week window that they have to fit it all in if we're already struggling to get over that 2,000 hectare mark, thinking that next year we might want to grow 6,000 hectares or more?
I would say, like, it's easier said than done, but we have to come together as an industry. Like, we have to unite, help your neighbour, have that discussion, because when we get showers, it's so isolated. So one field can be dry and the next field saturated. So we need to be having those conversations with our neighbours and as an industry to work together and say, hey, do you need a hand? And I know that's starting to happen, but it's not. We need to get that happening more so we can move forward as an industry.
And Cotton Grower Services has an office in Katherine as well. What are you hearing? I know it's been a very wet season. If you go east into the NT as well, are those growers over there having similar issues when it comes to getting all their crop in within this 8-week window?
Yes. Yep. From what I heard, they were waiting so they could plant to have moisture to plant, and then when it rained, the tap didn't turn off. So it would seem that we have something similar to a drought, but it's going to be too wet. So, yeah, Queensland, New South Wales, sometimes they can't plant because it's too dry. Here, we might not be able to plant because it's too wet.
Is there something that you'd like Bayer, as the regulator, to do? Is there a way that you'd like to see that planting window be maybe more flexible or different things done to help growers here manage those wet conditions as opposed to drought conditions over east?
Yeah, we need some help. We can't just have something set, and we know it's not set, but we need to do more trials on it. We need more flexibility. We need a bit more give and take. So, yeah, we need some more help, and we need someone over here more often.
Agronomist with Cotton's Grower Services in Kununurra, Tommy Palmer, speaking there with Alice Marshall. And the Country Hour has contacted Bayer for comment. It is 15 to 1 here on the Country Hour.
Hi, my name is Lily Rose Carey. I'm 12, and I live on Kalala Station, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
And my name is Dan Fitzgerald, and you're on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. We're also available on the ABC Listen app, where you can listen to us live, or you can also download our program to listen later at a time of your choosing. Just a reminder on the Barkly Highway now, it is currently open to travel in one direction at a time only, while road repairs are underway. This has been the case for over a week or so, and yesterday that direction actually got reversed. So listen carefully. The road between Three Ways and the Barkly Homestead is open in the mornings between 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. to westbound traffic, so from Queensland to the Northern Territory, and then between 12 p.m. and 3 p.m. it's open to eastbound traffic, so from the NT heading over to Queensland. And there are some restrictions. High clearance four-wheel drives are recommended because there is still water over that road, and there is a 13 axle limit on the road as well. So no triple road trains on that section of the road. There's contractors out there hard at work trying to get that Barkly Highway back up to spec. So please do be careful if you're driving on that road, and drive to conditions, and make sure you always check out the NT Roads Report website for the most up-to-date details. We're navigating megatrends and translating customer needs into value for livestock producers will be key issues for the new Managing Director of Meat and Livestock Australia. Michael Crowley is currently the Chief Executive at Herefords Australia, but he's previously held several roles at MLA, including as Regional Manager for Europe and Russia. And he tells Kelly Buchanan one of his first tasks when he takes up the reins will be to develop a new 5-year strategic plan for MLA.
The MLA strategic plan aligns very closely with the meat industry strategic plan, which is Red Meat 2030. And I think having that longer term industry plan, it allows the MLA strategy to really have a look at all of the investments that are in progress, what was delivered over the last 5 years, and start shaping MLA's investments to address those big ticket industry priorities going forward. And as part of that, there's a really important component that is very close consultation with the peak industry councils and livestock producers to help shape that strategy going forward, and then also working with the experience within MLA and having a look at the, you know, the outcomes and impact of the investments that have been made over the last 5 years and what shape those investments need to take in the future. And then you need to put all that together in a very clearly articulated plan going forward. But, you know, I guess the approach that I take is really looking at being customer focused, looking at those big mega trends, and really translating that back into delivering value back through the supply chain to the producer, who ultimately has to benefit. And you know, I think there's some big trends coming forward that that the next 5 years will need to address.
What sort of trends?
Well, I think sustainability is going to remain front and centre, and I think we need to look at the broader definition of sustainability and make sure there's a very neat balance between economic sustainability, environmental and social sustainability. So there's been a lot of investments in the environmental side, and I think that needs to also connect very closely with the economic side There needs to be enough money in the system for producers to be able to invest in their business that will also ultimately lead to positive environmental outcomes. So we can absolutely be productivity driven. And I think that will lead to better longer-term sustainability in livestock producers' businesses.
Do you think we also need to take a look at what we mean when we talk about productivity in that context, and maybe the measures that have been used in the past to determine success need to be looked at with different variables like environmental and economic sustainability?
Yeah, look, I think productivity means different things depending on where you are in the country and what your priorities are in your production environment. So, you know, further north, looking at both fertility, more kilos of production per unit of input, looking at low-cost production systems whilst also improving eating quality for the consumer. Moving further south, it's really about how to get to the next level of efficiency and productivity. I think it really depends on your business and your region. We look at sort of big industry-level priorities, but then we need to implement local solutions, and that's really where I think we'll get that level of impact when you tailor solutions to very specific needs.
When you talk about megatrends, it'd be remiss of me not to talk about your experience in Europe and Russia. What do you think the influence of decisions in Europe and around Russia and Ukraine will mean for local markets?
Yeah, look, I think international global market dynamics have an impact on us here in Australia. But I guess we just need to make sure we have enough markets available, reducing those economic barriers to trade, which has been very successful through a whole range of free trade agreements that have been delivered over the last decade. But there's also a lot of non-tariff trade barriers that need to be addressed. And that will be a focus so that we have uninterrupted global access into those markets and having enough diversity in markets. But also too, I think things like sustainability enable our industry to stay ahead of being handed down regulations from importing countries that force us to behave differently. Our industry has shown a lot of leadership in the sustainability space, and as a result, we've made a lot of progress compared to other countries. So we need to continue to stay on the front foot on those types of issues and also get those insights early, make sure we're informing people and staying ahead of those big global movements so that we're prepared and avoid those market disruptions. And that's a pretty big challenge, but I think continuing to work on those fundamentals will lead to longer term certainty around our market access and availability around the world, which we rely on heavily because of how much of our production we export.
Michael Crowley, he takes up the role as the new Managing Director of Meat and Livestock Australia next month on May 27. He was speaking there with Kelly Buchanan.
G'day, I'm Lisa Pepper and I'm in here at Darwin Port where we're currently in the process of loading a couple of thousand head onto the Greyman Express for live export. And thanks for listening to the Country Hour.
Well, did you hear this? The foal of champion racehorse Winx has set a new global filly yearling record, selling for $10 million at an auction late yesterday. The 18-month-old filly, sired by Coolmore Studs champion Stallion Piero, is now the most expensive yearling ever traded in the Southern Hemisphere. Winx, of course, won a record 33 straight races, including 25 Group 1 wins and 4 Cox Plates. And her first living foal drew international attention, but it was actually sold to a part owner of Winx, Debbie Capitis, and her Whoppet Bloodstock. Here's what she had to say about the purchase.
I didn't come here to buy this horse originally. We put her up for auction, and then in the last few weeks, all of the family, we started to miss our daughter, granddaughter. So we just decided that as best we could, if we could get her, we would. I am privileged to have been able to secure this filly on behalf of my family to be able to hopefully see if she can get to the racetrack. If she can't get to the racetrack, she'll be an amazing mum. She's Australian forever and she's going to be just fabulous. So thank you everybody for all your love and care for this beautiful horse. Hopefully she'll do her wings. But look, it doesn't matter if she doesn't.
Yeah, Debbie Kapita speaking to media there after that record-breaking sale of the foal of Winx. And yeah, hopefully that foal doesn't know the pressure that it is under. Coming, of course, from Winx, 33 straight race wins for that horse. You can read more about this story up online on the ABC Rural website. We're approaching the 1 o'clock news here on the Country Hour. Up after the news, we'll be crossing to the Weather Bureau. If you've got any questions for the bomb, send them through on 0487 99 1057. I'll speak to you in 5 minutes' time.
Hi, my name is Remy. I'm working at a tropical fruit farm out in the rural area of Darwin. We're a mango and dragon fruit grower with three different varieties, the red, white and yellow. And you're listening to the Country Hour on ABC Radio.
And you've got Dan Fitzgerald here with you today. Thanks a lot for your company. Whether or not you're listening live on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory or on the ABC Listen app, or you might be tuning in at whatever time you like, listening to a downloaded version of our podcast, which we put up sort of later in the afternoon, so you can listen to us whenever you want. Still to come in the next 25 minutes or so, we're going to head out to Catherine and hear from a local beekeeper who is pretty excited about some local flowering of some bloodwood trees, some native flowering there, which he says makes some really great honey.
When they flower, the nectar is that the bees make the honey out of is beautiful. The honey itself has a real red sort of a colour to it, and it's nice and light, very pleasant tasting.
Yeah, that story will be up on the Country Hour very soon. But first, let's go check in with what's happening in the weather. And we've got Rebecca Patrick at the Bureau today. G'day, Rebecca. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, Dan.
Let's just looking at the rainfall map, Rebecca. There is one little dot I can see on the map, and it's at the Wessel Islands, right in the top northwest of the territory. What did it get in the rain gauge?
Yeah, haven't seen much rainfall across the territory last 24 hours. Cape Wessel picked up 17 millimetres to 9 a.m. this morning, and I don't think I've even seen a dot on the radar since then anywhere in the territory. So, almost dry season-like conditions throughout the territory at the moment.
And can we expect any more rain in the next few days?
Probably still relatively dry the next couple of days. Perhaps later in the week, getting a bit more rainfall, particularly over northeast Arnhem, but also coming a bit further west from Friday onwards. But yeah, nothing too significant if you're away from that northeast Arnhem coast.
Yep. And for those in the top end, how much are temperatures dropping by this week?
Yeah, with that dry air, we're seeing the overnight temperatures a little bit lower. Got down below 18 degrees in Catherine this morning. Daytime temperatures still might be a bit warmer with those clear skies around. Could even see the rural area of Darwin seeing some cooler overnight temperatures over the next few days, with probably the driest conditions expected tomorrow and Thursday.
And how are things in the Barkly? Is that famous Barkly breeze? That's picking up, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've got a new high pushing in over southern Australia. That's picking up those winds across the southern and central parts of the territory at the moment. Around Tennant Creek, we are seeing quite elevated winds around that 40 kilometre per hour mark at the moment. And that's likely to continue for the next few days, particularly through the Barkly area. Haven't seen too much change in the temperature through central districts, but we are getting a bit of a cooler change across the Simpson and Lasseter districts this today, from today. So Alice Springs currently sitting on about 23 degrees, expected to get up to about 25 this afternoon. So yeah, that's about a 3 or 4 degree temperature drop from yesterday. Yulara 27 today, and Tennant Creek expecting a top of 30.
Yeah, and it looks like the Alice is in for a few cool mornings Thursday and Friday, down to minimum single digits.
Yeah, it was a bit warmer this morning, a little bit of cloud around, but yeah, from tomorrow, seeing those temperatures drop a few more degrees, so should be quite nice, cool conditions for the next few days.
And just lastly, for tomorrow, there is expected to be a marine wind warning out.
Yeah, that's right. That's for the southern Gulf of Carpentaria. With that surge coming through, that's likely to hit those southern coastal waters tomorrow. So those winds getting up to 30 knots potentially south of Groote Eylandt. But elsewhere, those winds are still fairly elevated, getting up to 25 knots through the Gulf and parts off the north coast as well.
Okay, is that all we need to know today, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much covered it.
Beauty, thanks for your time.
No worries, thanks Dan.
It's Rebecca Patrick there at the Weather Bureau. It is 10 past one.
If healthy living is your thing, the ABC Listen app has all the podcasts. Try the health report.
These are ultra-processed products, and if you compare the calories,
you might also like What's That Rash?
You're talking about zits.
Teenagers love to go...
Or Life Matters.
Love online after 50. It took me 18 months to download my first dating app.
Get your health kicks anywhere, anytime with the ABC Listen app.
Yeah, it is 11 past one here in the country hour with me, Dan Fitzgerald, on ABC Radio and the Northern Territory. Well, an agricultural learning space on the outskirts of Tennant Creek will soon be home to a temporary youth justice facility, the Juno Centre. It's normally used to teach high school students industry skills that are used in ag, things like working with cattle, riding horses, working in horticulture. And now the Department of Territory Families has confirmed to the Country Hour that later this month it is going to be used as a temporary residential youth justice facility until a more permanent facility is open, which we've been told is expected at July at the earliest. A department spokesperson told the Country Hour that this temporary youth justice facility would have no impacts on students and staff who currently use the Juno Centre. This is what the member for Barkly, Steve Edgington, has told us.
It seems that the Department of Territory Families, under the ministerial position by Naria Kitt, has now moving ahead to, I think, separate or use some of that facility as a secure youth justice facility. How that will work from the briefing that I got is that the secure part of that facility will be cordoned off and young people could be potentially held there on bail, a good behaviour bond, or some other order.
Now, the Department of Territory Families has told the Country Hour that the advantage of using this facility within the Juno Centre is that the young people staying there, they actually could access the education and training facilities of the Juno Centre. Now, Yarraman Territory is an organisation which uses horses to develop skills and improve young people's well-being. And Yarraman has run a program for young offenders at Dondale Detention Centre and at the Youth Detention Centre in Alice Springs, teaching kids to ride and to care for horses. Its founder, Mark Gallagher, has also worked at the Juno Centre in the past, and he's welcomed the Youth Justice Facility at the site because he said the learning facilities there could give young people the opportunity, a change that they may need.
I reckon it's great. I mean, that facility's got a huge potential to help young fellas out. And also, it's great to see some of the work that we do in the centre. We work in Dondale and Alice Springs Youth Detention Centre. So it's great to know that some of that work that we've been doing with the kids can be carried on at that facility.
What sort of benefits might kids get from working in that sort of a space or learning in that sort of a space?
Well, I believe that a lot of them kids, I mean, the end goal is them to get a job. So some of their grandparents and uncles and the last jobs that they've, some of them blokes have ever had in their family was working on cattle stations. So the way I see it, it's the only sort of link that might be able to save them kids and get them back in employment and doing something good for society.
How are you interested in supporting the, I guess, rehabilitation of these kids through that Youth Justice Centre at the Juno Centre?
Well, I mean, I'm not involved with the Juno Centre much at the moment, but yeah, I'd be more than happy to go there and help them out and teach kids.
You've said that you think it could be a really great opportunity to get these young people on the right track, but there is also, I guess, potentially an issue of staffing. If you've got vet trainers who are trying to teach a class of students from Tennant Creek High School, for example, how concerned are you about staff workloads and managing extra people or those sorts of things? I mean, you know, there's a shortage of teachers in the territory, full stop, at the moment.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, there's enough hours in the day, I believe, after spending some time at the Juno Centre, for them to accommodate both, you know, the needs of the high school and the youth justice facility. As far as getting trainers, it is hard. Everyone's finding it hard to get people.
Would you have any concerns about behavioural issues or things like that from the students who are in the youth justice facility as opposed to the students from the high school?
Look, I've been working with kids all across the Northern Australia from all different sorts of backgrounds over the past sort of 10, 15 years. And, you know, those kids in that Youth Justice Centre, like, yeah, there's some of them in there for some bad things and they need to be locked up, you know. But there's other kids there that just haven't had the right role models in their life. And they're quite a pleasant to work with, you know. They're good-mannered. You do the right thing by them and they'll do the right thing by you.
As Yarraman Territory founder Mark Gallagher speaking there to Victoria Ellis. And if you want to read more about this story about the Juno Centre being turned into a temporary youth justice facility, there's an article up online on the ABC News Facebook page, and the ABC News website. It is 16 past one.
Hello, my name is Sarah. I'm a third-year student studying at Animal Science Faculty, Universitas Gajah Mada. I'm now currently at the Northern Territory for the Indonesia Northern Territory Biosecurity Program. And now you're listening to The Country Hour.
Just quickly, Darwin Lawmed Convats Carlos. He was busy fielding questions about how the Darwin City Council was tackling the issue of mealybugs, which have been wreaking havoc on frangipani trees across the city. Now, we've heard on the program here that the NT government has been releasing some native ladybirds, which are actually known as mealybug destroyers overseas. They've been putting them out on frangipani trees across the city to try and get them to breed up and eat these mealybugs. A Convats Carlos, he was actually asked on air this morning if the council was considering buying some of its own ladybirds to release across the city to try and combat this pest, and this was his response.
The council is not very good at doing biological controls, but the Department of Agriculture and the department section that looks after pests is the best one to do it. I'm pretty sure Brian is listening to that one, and I'm pretty sure actually what they did now, they did a trial, they released it in the Esplanade. Yes, I had calls myself from many, many people. Even the Bishop of Darwin asked me if I can help him out because beautiful frangipani in front of the cathedral. So, guys, hold on, ring the hotline, and I'm pretty sure if the trial is proven effective, the government will actually invest on this one.
Yeah, that is Convats Carlos. He's the Mayor of Darwin speaking on ABC Radio Darwin this morning. And, yeah, that hotline he was talking about there is the Exotic Plant Pest Hotline. And the advice is if you see any damage that could be suspected to be the mealybug, the papaya mealybug, to call that hotline. That is on 1-800-084-881. That is 1-800-084-881. And yeah, the Department of Industry, it is putting out these ladybirds across Darwin. It's putting out a bit of a small trial at the moment. And if it is successful, I'm told that they'll probably go and purchase some more. These are native ladybirds. They already exist in Darwin, but what they're trying to do is sort of just boost the population so that they really mow into the mealy bugs, which have been doing a lot of damage to frangipanis and papayas across Darwin. Now, up next, we're going to head out to Edith, just near Catherine, to take a look at some flowering bloodwood trees, which have made a local beekeeper there pretty happy because he says that they make some very, very nice honey. That'll be on the Country Hour up after John Mayo. John Mayo there with the Queen of California. It is 22 past one here on the Country Hour on ABC Radio across the Territory. Well, a beekeeper near Catherine says he's very pleased to see swamp bloodwood trees around his property flowering for the first time in a couple of years. Stephen Rose, he says, the honey from the bright red bloodwood flowers makes a pretty rich, sweet honey. He told Yana Kahoot why it's so special.
We're standing right next to my only hive at the moment. The other three hives I got, there was much flowering and there was a drought on pollen. I didn't see it quick enough and they got down so low that the wax moths got in and actually destroyed the hives. But this one has survived. The bloodwoods are now just starting to flower, so this one's starting to pump nicely.
What's so special about bloodwoods?
When they flower, the nectar is that the bees make the honey out of is beautiful. The honey itself has a real red sort of a colour to it, and it's nice and light, very pleasant tasting.
Can you please describe to us what's the taste of the honey from the bloodwood?
It's not like the honey you buy, that's for sure. None of the honey here is like the honey you buy. It's the honey you buy is heated for one thing. Which gets rid of a lot of the esters out of the honey, which are the preservatives of honey. If you have pure natural honey that hasn't been processed, it's very hard for it to go candied. You know, like if you buy honey from the supermarket and have it, well, if you put it in the fridge, it'll go to sugar. Well, that doesn't happen if the honey is not heated. It's a bit more runny up here because of the humidity and that sort of stuff, so that doesn't really happen. And you get a lot more fruity flavours and you get a lot more floral smell to it. So, and you don't get that, you don't get an aftertaste after you've had the honey. Like, it's still, the bought honey can be, and dark honey can give you like a not a very nice aftertaste after you've swallowed the honey.
Why is it that they flower so shortly? Because you told me this was 5 or 6 years last time they flowered.
Yeah, like most eucalypts, they flower periodically depending on the seasons. They don't all flower every year. So if you get a bad year, if it's not too bad, they'll flower that year to try and... it's a survival tactic that most plants do. They'll try and reproduce to survive. But if it's too bad, they won't. And then as soon as you get a good season, after a bad season, they will do the same thing. They will flower prolifically and try to reproduce. If you get a number of good seasons, one after the other, well, I think everything's great and they won't flower.
Right.
So it's you can predict it that way, and not every species is affected the same way either. At the moment, we've got woolly butts here, lots of woolly butts, but they're not doing the same thing. It only seems to be the bloodwoods.
What's a good season? What's the definition of a good season?
Oh, when you get a lot of flowering. A good season for honey is when you get a lot of different species flowering, one after the other. It gives the honey a really complex flavour, lots of floral smells and fruity flavours through it. Which is absolutely amazing here. When you've got, say you might have grevilleas, you might have bloodwoods, woolly butts, and lots of other little ground covers and stuff that grow here in the wet season. The wet season honey here can be very pleasant.
When do you think we'll be able to have a first taste of it?
Oh, it'll be a while because I haven't put a super on this one yet. It'll be probably another 2 weeks, and then it won't be till end of April before we'll have some nice bloodwood honey.
Do you reckon you'll be selling it or you'll be keeping it for yourself?
This lot I'll have to keep for myself. I've got 1 kilo left.
In general, how have your hives been doing?
They've been doing quite well, even though we've had the drought for probably the last 4 years. So I've only had 1 to 2 hives during that time. So we had a series of bad years. Now I'm pretty sure we're going to get a series of half-decent good years. So I'm expanding my hives up to at least 4 or 5 to take advantage of the better seasons coming forward, hopefully.
What's your next plan in terms of honey making? Do you think you'll get more hives for the coming season?
Yes, I've already ordered 3 more nucleus hives from Darwin to try and get going quicker. Normally I would split my hives and just buy queens, but since I've only got one hive at the moment to try and get back into the bees, I have to buy bees in.
What's something that you'll try and do differently this time to try and avoid a hive dying or catastrophe?
I'll be keeping a closer eye on them. That's a thing when you've only got one hive, you sort of become a bit slack and you don't check on them regularly enough. So I'll be definitely, with four or five hives, it'll give me the opportunity to be able to manage them better.
That is Stephen Rose from the Northern Plant Nursery, speaking there to Jan Kahoot. Time now on the Country Hour to check out the markets. David Friend has the details from Roma.
With clear blue skies, Roma rates and spend 3,635 head, an increase of 2,405 on the previous sale. Cattle were drawn from New South Wales, South Australia and also the normal supply districts. The yarding consisted of more weight, which improved average prices. At the time of this interim report, light weight yearling steers under 200 kilos made to 310, with the 200 to 280 kilos selling to 442 to average 368. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos had an increase of almost 25 cents and made to 420, and the 330 to 400 kilos improved by almost 62 cents, selling to 382. Yearling steers over 400 kilos averaged 362 with an increase of 24. Only a few heifers at the time of this report, with 280 to 330 kilos to $3, yearling heifers 330 to 400 kilos to feed to 324, and the best of the heavyweight bulls to 266.
Thanks for that, David. And that is it for the Country Hour for today. Matt Brand will be back on your radio 12:30 tomorrow. Take it easy.